Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Talgrew.
Hello, everyone. I'm here.
Maddie's back.
Yeah, and getting paid to do work instead of volunteering. So my, you know.
It's such a negative start to the episode, is that?
It's 6:10 in the morning.
Yeah, it's rough. It's early for you boys. So appreciate the, you know, the early start, and it just proves our devotion to the cause. Of course, I feel a bit bad that I'm not wearing my Milan shirt because, you know, AJ's got his on. But
this is on because I couldn't find a hoodie on the couch or the floor that to wear because I'm.
So you keep your Milan shirt on the floor? Is that what you're saying?
This was on the wall, actually. Yeah,
stamping on it after the.
Because I've been awake for a total of 26 minutes. 26 minutes. So I didn't actually get dressed this morning. I made coffee, put on the shirt that was nearest to me.
There's nothing from the waist down, is there?
No, I got my sweatpants on.
Okay, right, fine. Yeah. Right.
Do you really want to know the answer to that question?
I just had this feeling that he was sat there in like just his underwear.
That's the one thing I don't have on, actually.
Just right, okay. Yeah, well. This is getting demonetized. Yeah.
All right. Not anyways.
What are you wearing?
We could make it like an S&M type situation or ASMR, whatever the actual
an
thing
SM
is.
Situation.
Both. Hey. Yeah, right. So this week we got a couple of games to recap. Unfortunately, no wins. And we've got a game to preview. Before we dive into it, we would like to say thank you to our Substack founding members, Des Windsor McGlynn, Ali Tarin, Tito Mack, Moritz Polman, Joey Gawler, Kemin MG and Mats, Luke Villano, Raul Escobar, and Rajat. Thank you for supporting what we do over on the Substack. Isaac forgot to send the little graphic thing to overlay, so I'm just going to read through the things that we've had on the Substack in the last week, and this is what you'd get for your $5 or €5 a month, 50 for the year. And of course, as a reminder, you can do a week free trial. The most recent thing to go out was the third installment of Behind Sempre Milan. As kind of mentioned in the previous couple of weeks, a lot of people have been asking, how did Sempre Milan come to be? Who were the founders? What, you know, when did it become like a full-time thing? And this talks about when we became part of our network, Rocket Sports. Isaac's doing a really good job with that stuff. So that follows on from the previous two installments. There was also a bit of a thought-provoking article about Milan's massively improved commercial record, you know, in terms of revenues growing and that kind of thing. But has it come at the cost of perhaps exploiting fans in some areas because there was all the fallout with the fourth shirt and the supply of it and the cost of it and stuff like that? And then there's been all the debates about ticket prices. Of course, you get the bonus podcast as well. The most recent episode of that on last Friday, we talked about the Europa League draw. Of course, we've got Slavia Prague. Yeah, plenty of good stuff over there on a weekly rotation. Go check it out. As mentioned, you can try a week for free and see if you like it. And thank you to everybody who's been supporting what we do over there. Let's dive into some Europa League second leg action against Stade Rennais at the Roazhon Park, I think it's called. I don't know if that's a brand or if it's actually the name of their stadium. I'm going to go with it being a brand. But yeah, we headed there with a 3-0 first leg lead. I think that what we were all hoping for is for this to be an easy night with a minimal amount of drama and preferably a low amount of goals, because that means we had a very good chance of going through comfortably. After 10 minutes, that all went out the window. we lost the game and we conceded three times. And yet, as a preface to all of this, and no doubt we're about to rant here, I never thought that we were at risk, really. But it was just frustrating the way it unfolded.
Oh, unfortunately, yeah, I was traveling during the game. So I'm going to say one thing and then let you two discuss here. I was in the chat earlier before I started having my meetings for the day. I think Lorenzo said something like, easy win, guys. We're going to go to the next round. And as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, he just jinxed it. It's going to be a night that maybe won't be as easy as we thought. So. That's all. That's my two cents.
Two cents.
Yeah. So my day, I was also at work in the office like a normal person on a Thursday. And the boss ordered some pizzas, booked the conference room, put it on the TV, and we watched it, you know, as a team. And I mean, I didn't have to work for 2 hours, so I guess that's an upside. But the downside was that I had to watch this game. For losing a game 3-2, you'd think this was a team that really pushed and was strong. But like all you said, I didn't feel like we were really under threat. Even at full time when we lost 3-2, obviously we knew we went through, you know. But like at 3-2, it didn't feel like, oh, are they going to get a fourth? Like, can we claw back into this? It was annoying, but it, and we'll get onto this with the Atlanta game as well, but I never felt like they created anything, like they did anything, you know. They pushed a lot more than they did in the first leg, and credit to them for coming to fight because they needed to after a 3-0 deficit in the first. But two penalties and one goal. It was a great goal. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, it's beautiful. That was awesome, but
I was a bit scared after that, to be honest, because not scared, but I think that's the one moment in the game, because it happened so early and they had the crowd right behind them. One thing I'll give Ren credit for is that their atmosphere was absolutely incredible. Like that massive surge of fans behind the goal when that first goal went in was optically really, really strange. It was like Boca Juniors or something like that. But yeah, ball on the edge of the box. We've given him the freedom of France to take aim and he just puts it in the bottom corner. I'm thinking, oh shit. That's the one thing we didn't want, is an early goal to get their crowd on side. But I suppose a couple of positive things, especially from the first half, is that number one, we responded quickly through that Luka Jovic goal, and that sort of took the sting out of things. It just dampened the atmosphere a little bit and it gave us a little bit of control. Number two is that we created an absolute boatload of chances. You know, we looked very dangerous on the break. Liao got in behind a couple of times and should have buried them, to be honest. So I always had that feeling in the back of my mind that we could always respond with a goal if they were to score again. And it shouldn't have been like this, though. I think that's the bottom line, is that we're all frustrated that you work so hard to get that 3-0 first leg lead with a pretty solid defensive performance and clinical finishing at the other end. And we don't seem to be able to put any kind of control on a game, you know? I think it's always difficult when you've won the first leg and you're going away for the second leg. Our record in second legs away from home is really bad. We've won something like 3 out of 11. And I think that obviously part of that is because, you know, the narrative becomes very simple. It's attack versus defense. They had to come at us. It was a bit pointless us trying to go at them. You know, we had to defend what we had. We just had no control over it. Like we couldn't hold on to the ball for very long. We were quite sloppy in our own half. The two penalties, I mean, you know, I think the Jovic one was pretty harsh, to be honest, but
I'll be honest, I don't remember them. We've given away so many in the last week that they're all merging into one, but what were they?
So the first one was a ball that was played in from the right side to Martin Terrier, who had his back to goal, and Kier tries to like get his leg around and get to the ball first. And he sort of
that one was a clear penalty, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
Need him in the back of the thigh.
Yeah, I've seen people say that was soft. Lorenzo in particular was very vocal about how like we should disband football if that's not a penalty, but we'd want it called our way. You know, there's no two ways about it. There was contact. He didn't really get near the ball and he stopped the forward from playing it himself. So for me, I have no arguments with that. And it was another mistake from a right-sided centre-back. We've had plenty of them. You know, Gabi has been the one who's been pretty mistake-free. And then it's Kier and Chao who've just been rotating, making errors. And then the other one was the con that was like a cross that came in and it was flicked at the near post with a head, and Jovic is like that and it just sort of flicks off him, you know, and goes out.
That one, yeah. Yeah, harsh. That one was interesting. It was harsh, but
a yard away.
Like it hits your finger.
Letter of the law shit, innit?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that you, like, if you allow a bit more subjectivity to it, you could use your head and use common sense. You know, what impact did that have on the game? Not a whole lot. But the result did, you know, they won because of that. And that's kind of shitty. And we'll get to that with the Atalanta one as well. Mm-hmm. But for this one, you know, like it is what it is. It is a penalty. Ultimately, we still went through. We shouldn't be in a position where we have to equalize twice against a team like Stade Rennais and then still lose. You know, that's not a situation a team like Milan, who wants to win the Europa League, who thinks that they should be favorites, who should have an easy path against anyone to the final. That's not a result we should be getting then, and if we're the team that we think we are. So it's frustrating, but I mean, the good news is Liao's hitting form again. So there's
yeah. That's an interesting point you make there, because I think after the 3-0 first leg win, which was a really, really, it was like an efficient and professional performance. Like they came in really good form and we dispatched of them. And you're thinking, okay, right, we've shown that there's levels to this and we shouldn't really be scared about playing the seventh best team in France, and rightly so. And you're thinking after that, like in this second leg, we can make a further statement and prove that with like a 5-1 aggregate win or whatever it might be, that we are serious contenders for the Europa League. And in actual fact, I just think that the way that the game played out, it's probably meant that we've learned nothing from the round in terms of whether we're good enough to win it or not, because of the lack of control that we had in that second leg. I mean, I was saying to Simon, shout out Simon, went to watch the Atalanta game with him at the pub. Then what happened to like us having that kind of European but Italian DNA, like where we do a really good job in the first leg and then just be really, really difficult to play against in the second leg? You know, rather than welcoming all these battles across the pitch and letting the pace of the game be 100 miles an hour where we're going to get exposed in transition and stuff, why didn't we just be fucking awful to play against? Slowing the game down, taking time over set pieces, drawing fouls, knocking the ball around the back if necessary, knocking it into the channels, you know, to make sure that you're not losing it in a dangerous area. It was just a pretty brain-dead performance from quite a lot of players, to be honest.
That's one of the frustrating things about this Milan side, is we don't have, like, we're not a cup team. I know we made it to the semis of the Champions League last season, but, and those were good cup performances. But you look at a team like Inzaghi's Inter, they know what needs to be done in every knockout game they play. They always do. Every single time. They may not always win it, but they know what needs to be done, and you're going to see the game plan. Like you said, this one, we just kind of said, okay, let's see what happens. Like, we had our game plan, leg one, win 3-0. Cool, played our game, dominant. The second leg, you have two options. You either become a defensive nuisance, like you just described, which is exactly what you should do when you know you're the team that's going to be defending an entire game. Mm-hmm. When you're in a second leg and you're away, the team who's down 3-0 is going to have to push from minute one to minute 90 to make something happen, as they did. Wasn't enough. You know, they all collapsed as if they were so close, but it's
that like, was funny.
You still are quite a few goals away here, you know, but they pushed for it. And we didn't counter that with our normal game plan of counterattacking football or becoming this defensive nuisance that you would do in a cup match. You know, instead we just kind of said, well, here's a rotated team, and you know, I think we got it. And you see it time and time again. It's why we keep crashing out of the Coppa Italia. It's, I mean, we got smacked by Inter in the semis last year, so that's not even really an issue. But we see it every time we've exited a cup in the last couple seasons. It's just been like that under Pioli. He doesn't have the cup mentality, the masterminding for that. And that's okay. Not every manager is. Like, he's obviously doing decent enough in the league that he's got a job after X amount of seasons and a Scudetto to prove it. So there's that, I suppose. But, yeah, just, yeah. Again, the results are good most of the time, but the style of play is not. Even when we win, it doesn't feel convincing. You know, it feels like we went on this huge run that just ended over the weekend, and not one of those games felt like we were in control. Outside of the first leg of this. So I don't know. I guess my frustration is again for another week with Pioli and the way he plays games.
Man, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, obviously the coach is going to shoulder a lot of the blame. I think the team that we sent out there, you know, Florenzi, Kier, Gabir, Teo, Benacer, Reinders, Pulisic, Musa, Liao, Jovic. I mean, it was enough to certainly not lose the game. and we did lose the game. The midfield, again, all at sea. There's just zero balance to it. No, it was so strange. It was like Bennacer was playing as a right winger. He found himself over on the touchline a lot of the time. Reinders was pushing up, leaving Musa on an island. I felt sorry for him. And you can't have that when we've got Gabir and Kier, especially because they played basically like a 4-1-5. They named their five forwards in the starting lineup: Doué, Terrier, Kalimuendo, and Bourigaard. And Bourigaard ended up getting a hat trick, which is remarkable, really. But yeah, it was Leão, nice goal on the counter. I don't think he meant to do that, to be honest. But given that he'd actually tried to put it back across goal in the previous two times he'd been through, I'm kind of happy that he hung on to the ball and had an empty net to pass it into.
Yeah, that was one thing that I've been seeing lately as well, is just this fear of shooting the ball. So many times we're in great positions in the box, and it's like, just shoot the ball. And they look for the pass. And it's funny, because that's been a criticism of mine in the past, is that I'm like, stop shooting, you know, look for your options. But now the exact opposite. They're afraid to just shoot when they have it. I'm not wanting these deep, crazy shots from range, you know, but they're inside the box. They're near the penalty spot. Like, take a shot. The worst thing that could happen is it deflects and you might get a second opportunity. Like, take the shot, and they just won't. It's crazy.
Leão in the first half as well had a couple of really frustrating dribbles, you know, where, as you mentioned, he sort of hung on to the ball for way too long and allowed, I think it's Guela Doué to step up and make a challenge and lost possession. Yeah, we made three subs just after the hour mark. Loftus-Cheek, Okafor and Chukwueze came on. That should have injected a bit of energy into the forward line and made us even more threatening on the counter, but I think our levels dropped, to be honest, after that. It seemed to take a bit of the sting of counter-attacking away from us, to be honest. And then Malik Chow and Terracciano came on in the closing stages. Maignan got a yellow for time wasting, which was quite funny. But yeah, I mean, look, we're through. We're through. We perhaps expected a trickier tie overall, shall we say, and we did the job in the first leg, and that can't be taken away from us. That was where the legwork was done. But as I say, I don't think it's taught us anything about our credentials to go on and win the competition, because it just feels like whenever we come up against a semi-decent opponent, they'll exploit those weaknesses so much better than what we saw from Ren. Top and flop.
I don't remember. Let me pull up my handy dandy FOP mob and see what opinion I could steal from that. It's taking longer than I thought it was going to. I'm going to go with the top of Teo Hernandez, because he had an assist and an 8.2 on FOP mob.
Yeah. I'm also trying to think, I'm looking at our ratings here to jog my memory. This game was very frustrating, and I feel like there were a lot of 5.5, 6 out of 10 performances. Obviously, Jovic got the goal and responded well after getting the red card that he got at Monza. But there was the handball for the penalty, so does that give... Honestly, that Leão goal rescued what was an otherwise really, really...
Yeah.
Frustrating performance. I'll go Teo as well. I think Teo was pretty dangerous going forward, got the assist for the first goal, as you mentioned, and was probably the best of the back four as well in terms of shutting down the threat from their right side. So I'll go with him. Flop of the match.
Kier. He kind of started the whole thing with that penalty, and it was not even close to not being a penalty. It was so very obviously one that there's no complaints on it. Almost to the point that you laugh, like how bad of a penalty that was to give away. So, yeah, and when you give that away in like the 23rd minute, something like that. No, it was later. Okay, it was the 54th. Sorry, guys, it's early. When you give something away like that, though, it sets the tone. And then, so.
Yeah, I think flop, this might be quite harsh, but I'm going to go Benacer because I remember being particularly frustrated with, and I don't know if it was tactical instruction, in which case, you know, most of the blame shifts to Pioli, but just baffled by his position. As I say, playing so far over on the right, giving away possession cheaply, particularly in the first half. Like, he had his moments, don't get me wrong, where he looked bright and we saw little glimpses, but I just didn't really get what was going on with the midfield in general. I think Moose is a candidate for it as well. Again, it could be all purely instructions that, you know, that they carried out, and it just exposed the approach a little bit. But I wasn't particularly thrilled with the midfield department and their lack of grabbing a hold of the game. And yeah, I guess we move on to the Atalanta review. Sunday night, San Siro, they've beaten us twice already this season. Luis Muriel, last minute winner in the league game in November?
Yeah, December. Yeah,
late last year anyway. And then obviously last month in the Coppa Italia, they beat us. Teun Koopman has scored twice, and one of them was from the penalty spot. That was to be repeated in this game. Couldn't have started any better, though, really. What a goal to end a five-month drought.
Yeah, that was an incredible goal. The slow-motion replay of it, you could see there was a tad bit of luck involved in that. You know, obviously, he makes the first defender and then flicks it in between them, the next two, and when he jumps over, he knees the ball. And obviously, like, you know, knees aren't a flat surface, so it could bounce anywhere. And he got lucky that it just perfectly bounced in front of him. I mean, it looked like the smoothest touch you've ever seen, but I think a little bit of that comes down to luck, and that's okay. Sometimes you need that. Certainly wasn't luck, was the shot. That was incredible. No business to score from that. I mean, that is such a strong, tough angle to hit. And yeah, he just he curled that bad boy in there. And I mean, did you guys feel like we were winning after that? Because I certainly did. I said, okay.
Yeah, I thought after that the team looked good. I thought Leao looked good. I was like, oh, this is a Milan that I haven't seen for a very long time. Like Leao specifically, I feel like he was just dribbling the ball freely wherever he wanted to go. He had the most successful dribbles he's had in the last six games that I've looked at. So he had between two and four for on average in the last six games. On Sunday, he had six.
That's a good stat.
Percent.
Yeah.
So like that alone just shows that either he's getting his confidence back or he's just hitting form, right? So.
Yeah, I think it's probably
doesn't he?
Yeah, I was going to say it's a combination of both, and just the history with Atalanta for this season. It's like, are we really going to let this team beat us three times? And I think everyone was up for it. I mean, like you said, Maddie, we look fucking great. We couldn't put the goal away. You know, there's so many opportunities. That Pulisic chance late that just barely missed. That one broke my heart. You know, I thought it was in. There was another one with Leal where he's dribbling past. He takes a shot. It deflects, and Giroud hits it, and then was it Scalvini or someone gets in there at the last second and heads it back? I mean, come on. I think he was offside in the end.
He was, but
yeah, but still, I mean, the fact we couldn't put that away, there was another opportunity with Pulisic. I think Pulisic actually had a couple chances that he ultimately whiffed on. There was another big chance. I mean, we had 20 shots this game, right? Like there was a lot of moments to pick from where it was like, okay, that should have been the goal. Without getting to the penalty, horrible officiating. The yellow card to Leao was like, what are you talking about? You know, he was on the ground and just threw his hands up like, yo, I just got fouled, like every player does. And for him to get a yellow for protesting there is crazy. It's just out of the blue. It made no sense. It wasn't like, I mean, obviously we can't hear what he said, but it didn't look like he was screaming explicitives or anything towards the ref. He just said like, oh, are you going to give this guy a card? Scalvini fouled him three times, like blatant fouls with no attempt to get the ball, three times in a row, no card on any of the calls. It was just a lot of stuff like that. Pioli got a card, and I think it was before the penalty, even before he even reviewed it. He got a card on his way to the the VAR booth, which was weird. Obviously, I'm sure he said something. That's how that worked. But there was just weird moments like that. And then getting to the penalty itself, I mean, it's not a penalty.
Well, what he saw.
That's the thing. He didn't see anything. He looked at the screen 3 seconds. He didn't even see all the angles that the VAR booth saw to recommend he go look at it. Like, I don't know. I would love to hear the audio and see what was discussed, but everyone that I spoke to, including Inter fans, said it wasn't a penalty. Everyone on the commentary team and the Paramount post-match booth said it wasn't a penalty.
Which never happens. The Paramount, like, ref in-house or whatever is always like, oh, great call, blah, blah. We're like, nah, you're blind. And this time she was just like, I don't know what the ref saw.
Yeah, even the refereeing expert said that's nah. That shouldn't even have been called to review, let alone overturned. I mean, it's like, look at, they said high boot, but you could see that Giroud's leaning back. It's not actually that high. It's like probably mid-level, which is a normal spot for where the ball is. He's clearly playing the ball. The only reason it's high on who did he hit? Was it
Holm?
Yeah, on high on Holm is because he went down to head it. But even then, it's like on his side in his armpit, not actually poking into him, and the ball hits his back. So it's like, what part of the game did this really impact? You know, he was playing the ball. You look at some of the other penalties that we weren't given or that we had been given in the past, that other teams have been given in the past. You know, that they're nothing like this. This one had nothing to do with the game. Like, to make a game deciding decision on someone playing the ball and it like not even hitting the, I don't know. It's just, it should never be called.
Call a dangerous play or a high foot boot.
Yeah.
I think a high boot, which comes under dangerous play. There's two outcomes potentially from the replays that you can see. I think the first one is a yellow card to Holm for play acting because he goes down holding his face.
There was
nothing anywhere near his face, unless it was the ball that skimmed his face before, you know, then. So that was a deliberate attempt to deceive the referee. I feel like that should have been taken into account if he'd have looked at more replays. I can't believe he only looked at one and it seemed to be a still rather than a replay. If he'd have seen more evidence, I think that Osato's a strange referee because, well, he's shit, but he's strange in the sense that he's very ego-driven, you know? We see that whenever a player even chirps a little bit, the yellow card's out. He loves booking coaches. And I think he's one of the few referees in Italy who would go over to the screen and almost be offended if the VAR called him over for a decision that he didn't think he got wrong. So I was kind of hopeful that when he went over to the monitor, he'd say, what am I here for, kind of thing, and then just go back. But it doesn't happen that way. Like, it's so often a formality that when they go to the monitor, the decision's already basically been made for them. But yeah, he looked at like one frame of it. And I don't like slow motion replays because it doesn't show the true game dynamics, things like force and the point of impact and all that kind of thing. And decided to point to the penalty spot. With all the replays that then follow afterwards on the broadcast and all the stuff you see on social media, I think it's very apparent as well that Giroud, okay, he makes a genuine attempt for the ball and he doesn't get the ball. So the counter argument might be that Giroud has made a naive slash reckless play there by going in with his boot up. As you kind of mentioned, you know, he's stooping in for the header, so that makes it look a little bit worse. But the point is that when you see it, the contact is so soft that it would never in a million years be enough for a player to go down. So then you start to come to the consistency argument of it all and say, okay, well, the numerous shoulder barges that we've had against us inside the box in recent weeks, they're penalties too then. Because it doesn't matter, does it, about the level of contact anymore. It's about if there's contact. It's become like the NBA. You're not allowed to touch anybody anywhere near the goal or that's it, penalty kick. And as you say, it's a game-deciding decision in the end. He maybe thought that, you know, I'm going to give this and then there's enough time for whatever happens to happen. But it was just a joke of a decision. And as you say, the overwhelming response to it has been that it was so wrong. You know, it was totally wrong. And even Gasperini said after the game, he said it's one of those penalties that wouldn't have been spotted before VAR, but now they get given. And he also said something along the lines of, well, we're in credit when it comes to penalties, especially against Milan. As if to say he knew that they got one that they shouldn't have got and that they've used one of their little tokens, shall we say, because they've been hard done by in the past, which I think is total bollocks, to be honest. But the whole thing just stunk to it. It ruins your faith in them doing what they get paid to do, the officials. Well,
and that's something I've always said is you should never know a referee's name in any situation. The referee, the game has nothing to do with the referee. The referee is there to make sure the people who the game is about play the game correctly. The fact that I know Daniele Orsato's entire name and recognize him the second I see him is bad. I shouldn't know who this is. This should just be some old man in a yellow shirt on the pitch, but it's not. It's the guy who...
He'd be an old man refereeing the game, to be fair.
He is an old man. He's very old.
I know, I said there shouldn't be.
Oh, yeah.
He's, I think he's in his 50s.
I don't know. He's got gray hair, but all I know is this is the guy that ran up to the VAR monitor, gave our coach a yellow card for saying something as he was going, looked at the VAR monitor for 3 seconds and said, I'll show you, and then gave a penalty. So, if anything, I think he's retaliating against Pioli for whatever Pioli said. So, in a roundabout way, we could blame Pioli for this.
I like the methodology there. You know, at the end of the day, we had a whole second half to score again, right?
I agree.
We should have been able to put a goal in the back of the net to get all 3 points, but we didn't. And again, you can circle back and blame Pioli for that as well.
I mean, yes and no.
Half joking. But like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. We should have put another one in goal. Like, there's no reason to. The penalty came in the 42nd minute. Like you said, we had the entire second half. We had the rest of the first half, which was like 3 minutes plus, I think, five of added time. Something like that. But we dominated possession, shots. The XG was better for us. I mean, not by a whole lot, to be honest with you. It's relatively the same, but penalty, that gives you like plus 0.9 or something ridiculous. So it makes a huge difference there. I mean, we missed a lot of big chances. Seven shots on target in the box. 11 shots in the box is like a lot for us. We don't create that many chances. So we should have been able to put one away, and ultimately we weren't able to. It's frustrating, man.
Just finally on the refereeing thing, if you search Orsato Sempre Milan in Google or whatever search engine you use, there is literally a category for him on the website, because we've written so many articles about the mistakes that he's made in our games. There's one article that lists all of them, and that's from a while ago, so it needs to be updated. But basically, he doesn't seem to like us. All of that to say, and all of the frustration from the penalty and stuff, I have to say I'm almost proud of the performance that we put in. As weird as it sounds, because we didn't win, and I don't want that to be the level. Like, you shouldn't be proud to draw home to Atalanta, but the way that we actually played was really refreshing. Like, we had a real go at them, and we were... Gasperini even admitted after the game that we had them on the ropes, and that, like, they hadn't had a team play against them like that for quite a long time. They'd won 6 in a row coming into it, so they were in good form. They were scoring plenty of goals. I thought that... Did we both predict us to lose or to drop points in the preview?
Yeah, I think we all did, yeah.
And it just felt like that was the way it was heading. However, if you looked at that, you'd say we were the team who were banging form. We are the team who were 7 points ahead in the table. I think it was important that we kept that distance to them. But 70% of the ball in the first half, 69% overall, nice. 20 shots to 8, 7 shots on target to 3, 2 big chances to 1. We knew we had 5 corners to their 3, drew 4 yellow cards from them. To our one, like it tells the story of a dominant performance, and I just feel gutted for the lads that they weren't able to find, you know, that second goal in the second half. And I did think that penalty before half time might just swing it, and that Atalanta would come out swinging in the second half, and they just never did. We kept control throughout, and yeah, the only thing you can say is that we didn't manage to find a way, as we probably should have done.
Yeah. The irony is the clip of us from last week going around right now and me saying we scored 2.56 goals per game and we could only get one immediately after I bring up that stat. So, yeah, pretty rare.
I thought there'd be more goals in the game than two, to be honest.
Oh, 100%. You know? 100%.
I bet that there was going to be three total or over 2.5. And I was like, easy.
Yeah.
It's Atlanta. Yeah, 100%.
They'll either get five or we'll get like three.
I will say the most frustrating part about this to me, and it's, look, we're not winning the league. It's no surprise.
Yeah.
But a week ago, we had the opportunity to jump Juventus and go second. We were 2 points behind them. They had just drew, and we had the chance to beat them again, or beat Monza to jump them. Instead, we lost to Monza. Then they won again this week with 14 seconds left in stoppage time. And then we dropped points again, and now we need two games to beat there to jump over them. We're 4 points behind now. And like I said, we're not going anywhere. Third place is probably where we're going to finish. Worst case scenario, fourth, but still it's just frustrating. You know, you always want to move up the table when you have the opportunity. And now it's literally out of reach. It's going to take multiple weeks to get there.
It felt like as well, like that, you know, this was a game where we're on top. And if you find a way to win it, and you come off the pitch thinking we actually deserve to beat the most informed team in the league alongside Inter. And then you go to Lazio, who are really, really stuttering at the moment. You go there on Friday and win. And all of a sudden, you can really surge to end the season in the right way. And you can go into the Europa League games a bit more carefree. More carefree in the league, I mean, in terms of like that position's locked up. We might even get second. But we've got form going into Slavia and then hopefully... you know, we get through that and we will probably face a much tougher opponent in the next round. And yet, you know, it's a little bit disappointing to come off with a 1-1 draw. Couple of things. Liao's, as has kind of been alluded to, Liao's performance was purely called it the best of the season so far from him. And I'm inclined to agree with that. 4 key passes, 2 big chances created, 6 dribbles completed, 3 out of 4 long balls completed. One of those long balls was that one over the top to Pulisic that he brought down with his thigh and then just poked wide of the far post. That was a brilliant move, to be honest. You expect Liao to be the last man rather than dropping in to play that pass. So to see it flip over and, you know, that would have been a lovely goal if that went in. Important here as well, I think, is he won 10 out of 14 ground duels. And Liao's numbers on duels are usually... they leave a bit to be desired, but I think it showed that he was well up for the fight and he was a constant menace down the left side and he drew 4 fouls and he's now scored more goals against Atalanta than any other team in Serie A, barring Lecce. Scored 4 goals against both of them. Teo got another assist. He's the third.
Teo has 4 goals in the last, or 3 goals in the last 4 games, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, Europa League. Both in the Europa League, weren't they?
Okay.
Yeah. Five month drought ended as well. And hopefully he really kicks on from that. And the other thing I want to actually give a bit of praise to Pioli, because I think part of the reason that we were so dominant in the game is because he changed the way that we played against Atalanta, and it was the right thing to do. I think it was obvious given the selection problems that they had, the changes they were going to make, and they had CDK leading the line and we kept him very quiet, which was always good, you know, because he's been on a tear of late. And we seemed to switch to like a 4-1-4-1, and the player that you would expect to be in the hole in front of the defence was probably not Adli, given that Adli would have to then keep tabs on Coop Miners, who's one of the most dangerous attacking midfielders in the league, and also keep tabs on Miranchuk a little bit as well. But Adli played in that position in front of the defence and he did really well. Like, it was a very, very solid performance from him. He made a couple of really important defensive interventions. His passing radar looked to be in tune this week, which was, you know, a big positive. And you found Bennacer getting a little bit further forward again. I think it was a tweak that worked. And I've got to give Pioli credit for that, because we kind of neutralised all the things that Atalanta are good at. And You don't dominate a game like that unless you get the tactics spot on, especially against a coach who's had your number twice already this season and multiple times in the past before that. So I'll give him a little bit of praise on that front. Tops and flops. Top, Liao.
Yeah, it's got to be Liao.
Yeah, very dynamic. Like, literally the cause of everything good that we had going forward. Big, big performance. And flop.
This one's tough. I'm going to go Maignan, I think, just because, look, that's 11 consecutive penalties he's let in.
We're getting fed up now.
Yeah.
I was legit going to do Maignan as well. When he was lining up to take the pen, I was like, this is the one. He is going to save us. And I was just like trying to like manifest it.
Do you know why?
And I was like, fuck.
Yeah, but the reason that we're getting so annoyed with it now is not the fact that he's conceded all 11, by the way, 11 penalties we've conceded this season.
Eight in the last 10.
Good stat. We had 7 in each of the last 2 seasons across all competitions. And obviously this season we have a minimum 14 games to go, probably more. So we're going to absolutely probably double that number the way that we're heading. But yeah, the reason that we're getting pissed off with it now is because Maignan is doing the same thing each time. He's just diving bottom right way too early, and it allows the penalty taker to just place it down the middle. Now, I know it's a psychological battle. He's thinking, you know, eventually they're going to think I'm not diving that way, and then I'm going to go that way and save it. I just think he's committing way too early, and then players just side-footing it down the middle of the goal.
He did better on this last one against Atalanta. I think he did wait the right amount of time. I mean, he still went the wrong way, so it's what it is. But
he still let it in at the end of the day.
And look, I recognize that
penalties are hard to save.
Right. Like over 80% of the time. You know, that's fine. But Maignan, prior to this season, was one of the top stoppers in Europe as far as penalties go. It's not the case this year. And a lot of it comes down to our defensive injury crisis. You know, how many of these penalties are being given away by a guy who's freshly back from injury, or a third or fourth string center back, you know, like most of them, right? Or a striker or something, you know, that shouldn't even be in the box to begin with. It's been just frustrating overall defensively, and a lot of Maignan's shortcomings come down to the fact that we haven't had our starting center back duo in really the whole season. You know, you look at the start of the season, we conceded like 1 goal in our opening 3 games. And then our 4th game came against Inter, and we didn't have Tomori concede 5 goals. And the 1 goal we did concede against Roma in that opening 3 was after Tomori got a red card. And then it just snowballed after that. You know, we got back in form because Tomori came back. But every time we had a center back drop, goals kept coming and coming and coming. And, you know, that's been the tale of the tape this whole season is, yeah, we have the second best offense in the league by far, and it's only slightly behind Inter's. But our defense is the worst out of the top 12, 13, something like that. I mean, it's
11th best defensive record. Yeah. So 9th most goals let in. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. It's the old saying, in it, but it applies more to American sports. I think that defense is what wins you championships. But if you look at the Scudetto season, we had the joint least goals conceded. And when we went on that remarkable run to end the season, we conceded 2 goals in our last 11 games. And that was the difference. Like, 1 goal was enough for us to win. When we went ahead, we won games. And now we just feel so frail and brittle. And I think there's a lot of things that factor into that. But it's something that needs sorting out in the summer. And hopefully we get the starting centre-backs back and they stay fit. My flop is Giroud. I don't think he was... this isn't even for the penalty that he gave away, but you can't deny that he was at the centre of that incident. It was more so just his overall play that was frustrating. Second half, we were getting the ball into wide areas really well and loading in a lot of crosses. He just didn't get anywhere near him. He just seemed a bit behind the player. His link-up player wasn't there. His hold-up player wasn't really there either. Look, we got a few days off now, and he'll start again against Lazio because Jovic is suspended for that game. But yeah, we need a bit more from him than what we saw. Lazio preview then. So Lazio lost last night to Fiorentina. in what was a it's a pretty big game. You know, they're one of the teams that are in that sort of tailing chasing pack, looking to try get into the European spots. They're on 40 points after 26 games, and that defeat against Fiorentina meant that Fiorentina actually jumped above them. Bonaventura scored the winner in that.
Yeah, do you know who scored the winner? AJ's favorite midfielder.
Bring him home.
Paqueta. No.
Yeah, that was a hell of a game, by the way. I didn't watch this one because I had West Ham Brentford on, but I did not.
Lazio is an interesting team. You know, if you look at our head-to-head, we've won 5 of the last 6 against them and only conceded in the loss and one game that we won against them. The two games where we have conceded have been the away games, which is what this one's coming up to be, is an away game. So definitely keep that in mind. But, I mean, looking at the last couple games, 2-2 win, 2-2 win, 4-0. I'm sorry.
They beat us 4-0 last January.
2-0 win, 2-0 win, 4-0 loss, 1-2 win, 4-0 win, 2-0 win. So we're putting goals past them. Only one game we weren't able to score multiple goals against them, and that was a part of last year's January nightmare. So I'm not even going to count it, you know, but it is what it is, I guess. So
January of last month does not count.
Last year.
Last month was technically January. So
yes, but that one counts. Either. That was a good one for us.
That was okay.
We needed that one.
I think Lazio's season can be perfectly summarized in the last 5 games. Start of February, they lost 3-1 away at Atalanta, so they lost ground on them. Then they went to Cagliari and won 3-1. And then they lost 2-1 at home to Bologna, and they were outplayed in that game. I remember watching it. It was the early kickoff, so they lost ground on them. Then they went and won 2-0 away at Torino, which is actually not a bad result, because Torino have been more difficult to beat this season. They're not that far behind them, actually. And then they lost last night to Fiorentina 2-1. So they're just alternating a good win with a really damaging one, and that's why they find themselves in 8th place and... you know, they're one spot above Napoli, and Napoli have a game in hand. So if Napoli win that game in hand, they actually go above them. And considering that everyone forgets, Lazio finished 2nd last season. And Napoli are having, like, the worst title defence in, a generation? And they could end up below them in the table very quickly. And that's... who's had the real biggest drop-off? Well, it's still Napoli, but, you know, I just think Lazio was such a team to admire last season. The way that they were playing under Sarri, the way that he got everybody firing, they were unpredictable going forward. You had wingers switching. They were getting contributions from midfield. I think that this season has maybe proven how much of a glue Milinkovic-Savic was holding things together. And I also think that some of the business that they did in the summer wasn't particularly smart. You know, you look at Kamad as being a flop. Castellanos is probably going to be judged as a flop.
At least. The there.
Yeah, and what we're seeing now is probably Sarri's last few months as Lazio manager. I think if it were me, I'd potentially stick with him, but only if you're going to back him, kind of thing. Like if you're going to keep doing these scrimping and saving summer markets, he's going to get fed up and want to leave. But this team isn't built to play the way that he wants to play anymore, I don't think. And yeah, it's certainly not as daunting a prospect as it was last season, playing them away from home. And it wasn't even that. It doesn't really feel like that anymore. Whereas in the banter era years, it's like, well, we're going to get slapped. It's just by how many. I remember that 4-0, was it 3 or 4-0 that we lost, and Correa ran us ragged and Felipe Anderson as a false 9 and stuff like that. Whereas now I'm tipping us to win this one, to be honest. I know it'll be a fierce atmosphere, and I know it's, you know, a Friday night game, so we're getting a little bit less rest. But I think we'll win, and I think both teams will score. I'd say 2-1 us.
Yeah, I don't ever fear Lazio anymore. When we do lose to them, it's a massive margin, like the 4-0 in January, or I think it was like April of 2021. We lost like 5-2 or something stupidly ridiculous to them. I was in the car. I didn't get to watch that game, so it's hard to really, you know, it doesn't hurt like it the other ones do. But I think just based on our record, we're going to smoke them. Not smoking. We're going to win, but we are going to concede because it's an away game. So I think 2-1 is fair. I think I'll go 3-2, actually. 3-2. I just think we're letting in too many goals right now. Is Tomori back for this one, or he's back next month?
No, tomorrow's going to be back, but probably just a squad, back in the squad.
Yeah, that's fine.
He'll start. But
I would like to see Kalulu. I know he's been back for a bit. He was even on the bench.
Heard from my bad. My normal alarm, not my. That's my
volunteering alarm.
The podcast.
It's one of those weekends as well in Serie A where, in the upcoming round of games, technically this one's midweek, but Inter Atalanta play each other. And then over the weekend, obviously, we play away at Lazio. Monza Roma, not too important, but Torino Fiorentina. I think Torino could take points off them, to be honest. Atalanta Bologna, that's massive. Napoli Juve. So there's some head-to-head clashes coming up, and we've got to hope that that the teams around us drop points and we can continue putting on pressure for second, because that's all it seems to be. that's as good as it gets.
It's scary that we drop points to Atalanta, because now they go against first place and fourth place. And look, I'm not saying it's impossible, but Atalanta could beat both Inter and Bologna. And we'd be talking about this weekend them only 1 point behind us all of a sudden, you know? So it definitely becomes a bit daunting, a bit scary, but hopefully we pull it off.
Yes, sir. Right. We'll wrap it up there, I think. I know that we said we were going to do questions in last week's bonus episode, but I forgot that the Europa League draw was happening the day after the second leg. So this week, for the bonus podcast, what we will definitely do is go back through the last two questions, tweets, and read some of them out and answer them, like a bit of a roundtable type thing, to make up for the fact that we haven't done any as part of this episode. So again, if you submitted questions in the last couple of weeks and you want to listen to the bonus podcast to see if yours gets asked and answered, then sign up with a free trial, or even better, sign up at $5 a month or $50 for the year over on the Substack, which link will be in the description. Also, I wanted to say just before we end it, thank you to everybody who tuned into the watch along that we did for the Atalanta game. Because it was the earlier kickoff slot for the Ren return leg, we were going to do it if it were normal time, but because it was the earlier slot, it just didn't give Lorenzo and Steph time to get home from work and fire up the stream and stuff. But we'll be back for future games. And thanks to everyone who watched the Atalanta game. But yeah, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
See you guys next time.
Got it.
Yeah, maybe I'll be back within the month.
Catch you in a week's time, everybody.
Goal! A Donatello! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!